Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. In the winter of 1939, 5-year-old Andrew Biankowski was exiled to Siberia with his family. The 2 years of struggle that followed, especially his grandfather's amazing act of sacrifice during their first long cold winter, have informed the rest of Andrew's life. Thanks to his devoted mother, his quick-witted grandmother, and the unexpected kindness of strangers, Andrew established an approach to life that emphasizes helping others as the essential path to finding our greatest human fulfillment. As Andrew shares his Siberia stories and his experience counseling those in distress, he reminds us that the greatest fulfillment we can achieve as human beings is found in helping others. Andrew is a veteran of the U.S. Air Force who served in the Korean War. He worked as a psychologist for 40 years, designing and implementing mental health programs and working directly with patients. Co-author Mary Akers is also the author of a short story collection titled Women Up on Blocks. Her fiction, poetry, and nonfiction have appeared in many journals and anthologies. Andrew and Mary, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Yes, I'm so glad to be here.
I am so honored to have you both on It's Your Health. And Andrew, in the author's notes, you write, quote, "I am not a writer, and my stories from Siberia were like photographs as seen in black and white. What Mary did with her wonderful writing skills was to put color to those pictures." And Mary, I just want to say the color in those pictures is amazing. You did such a beautiful job.
Thank you.
Really beautiful. And Andy, we spoke prior to the interview. I know it's really important that, you know, you and Mary wrote the book together. And how was that process? And also, how did you two meet?
Well, it's an interesting story because I attempted to write this book many, many years ago, 15 years ago, maybe, when I first retired, and I gave up because I discovered that I'm not a writer. And we have a mutual friend who got us together. And it was, like, amazing because as soon as I met Mary, I knew that this was the person that could put life to this book.
I told him he could think about it, and he said, "I don't need to think about it."
Oh.
It was nice.
Oh, that is so nice. Now, Andrew, could you tell us a little bit about your life prior to being banished to Siberia, a little bit about your family?
Well, we lived in the part of Poland that was close to Russia, and in 1939, Poland was invaded by both Russia and Germany at the same time. This was really the beginning of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get into that war until much later, but we were a successful middle-class Polish family, and when the war broke out, my father was, he was in the reserves, he was immediately mobilized and fought Germans and the Russians, and he was captured by them and was a prisoner of war in Russia, and then the Russians took more than a million Polish people, mostly women and children, and just deported them and dumped them in Siberia.
And, you know, I mentioned in the introduction about your grandfather's amazing act of sacrifice and one life to give, you write, quote, "My grandfather made the decision to put our needs before his own and pay for it with his life. To honor his sacrifice, I have in turn aspired to make my life meaningful to the world." And from reading your book, you've done so many wonderful things in the stories of your patients and the way you live your life. If you can tell us a little bit about your grandfather and the sacrifice he made.
Well, the fact that we were very close to actually dying of starvation. And there were sometimes several days when we didn't have any food at all. And my grandfather made a conscious decision to stop eating, basically. And what he announced to the family was that the food that would be saved by his not eating would help my brother and I survive. My brother was three. And so he literally starved to death.
Oh, my gosh.
So that we could survive. And, you know, that story, a lot of people say to me, "Well, that's a very sad story." I said, "No, I don't think of it as sad at all. I think of it as very inspiring."
Yes.
In a way, it inspired my philosophy of life, you know, that what gives meaning to life, what makes life meaningful, I emphasize that, is to focus on other people in your life. You know,
mm-hmm.
The original title for this book, where I met Mary, was helping each other. So that's basically my philosophy, is that what makes life meaningful is to help each other. We're here to help each other.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Mary, so did you come up with the One Life to Give title?
we struggled through a lot of titles. This book first came out in Australia, and it was called Radical Gratitude and Other Life Lessons Learned in Siberia.
Oh, that's nice, too.
Okay, they called it The Greatest Gift.
Mm-hmm.
I can't pronounce the Polish title.
Well, you know, this book is being published now in four languages.
Oh, that is fantastic.
The latest contract that we're about to sign is with a French publisher.
It should be read everywhere. It really should. That's wonderful.
Thank you. All right, to answer your previous question,
sure.
The publisher, together with the publisher, we came up with this.
Mm-hmm.
We toyed with titling it Bury Me Naked because of that's what it, another thing his grandfather said on his deathbed.
Oh,
sell the clothes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But the marketers thought that wouldn't be the best title.
Okay. Well, it's, you know, you mentioned a moment ago one of the titles had to do with radical gratitude. I actually have a question about that. What is radical gratitude, and why is it the first step on the path to finding yourself by helping others?
That's a very interesting concept because I use it quite often with some of my patients and in some of my classes that I teach, that it's easy to be grateful for good things that happen to us. But what I suggest to people is that the most important lessons that we learn in life usually come from the most difficult experiences, the difficult, painful, awful experiences. When we look back, like I look back on Siberia and my 2 years in Siberia, those were awful experiences, but I learned the most important lessons from those experiences. And so we need to be grateful for those things.
What?
And that's called radical gratitude.
Well, what are some of those lessons that you learned in Siberia?
Well, lessons like forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I've met many people who went through similar experiences like I did in Siberia, and because they were not able to forgive, they are to this day still bitter and angry, and they're still suffering from Siberia. I learned very early that to forgive, you're doing yourself a favor. When I forgive someone who's done something awful to me, I'm doing myself a favor. I'm letting go of that experience. I don't have to suffer it anymore.
How did you learn that forgiveness? Because it seems really difficult when you're in that dire of a situation.
I think that probably it was always there, but I think it really crystallized when I was going through training from a psychologist back in the 50s and 60s when I was in graduate school and in college. I learned very quickly that patients who are going through some awful experiences in their lives, very often they can't let go of those experiences and they can't forgive. That becomes a stumbling block to recovery.
Yeah, it's like they're still there.
Yeah, I mean,
and
let's put it this way: with so many patients that I've worked with, the self-identity of being a victim. I am a victim. If you can't let go of that victimhood, that identity as a victim, you're never going to get well.
Yeah, that's true. That's. Oh, go ahead, Mary.
Sorry to interrupt you. He has a wonderful concept about this. Would you just mention that briefly about what you choose to remember?
Yeah, this is something that crystallized. It's interesting because it really crystallized during the time of writing this book. Mary and I worked on this book for 2 years before it actually became a book. What you choose to remember and how you choose to interpret what you remember determines who you are today.
Oh, okay.
It's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
People don't like this. I presented this to a lot of people, and they don't like it. Because it emphasizes the idea that you choose to remember what you remember.
Okay, I understand.
You choose to interpret what you remember. And it's those choices that you make that determines who you are today.
Mm-hmm. And it's true. You know, and speaking of choices, your grandmother, Babsha, how do you say it?
Babsha.
You know, she made some really interesting choices, and she was very courageous, and you write, in a quote, having courage does not mean that you are without fear. Courage is what comes when you are afraid, but you know you must act anyway. And so you do, like my grandmother. Can you share a story of your grandmother's courage with us?
Well, the one in the book, where a Russian soldier was holding a gun to her head, and he knew that my grandmother would pray, and he used to come in and visit us, and at this point he came in and he was pretty drunk, and he put a gun to my grandmother's head, started praying for him. And he was confused because she prayed for him. And he put the gun down in a rather confused way and left the room. Now, to me, that's courage.
Oh, that sure is. God, that must have been so intense for you. I mean, I just reading your book, I mean, you were 5 years old. I have a 5.5-year-old daughter. I can't even fathom.
It's a quick way to grow up, I think.
Yeah, a little too quick.
I think I missed my childhood because at the age of 5, I had to contribute to her survival in a way because we would, everyone in the family had to do something to help to get food. And my job, I remember that one summer was, I would spend a whole day out in the field picking wild strawberries. And I would come home in the evening after doing this all day, and this was my contribution to the family survival. I had this whole can full of wild strawberries.
Wow. And you also write about in the book how that was important because it gave you the, you know, purpose as well.
Well, yes. Being able to contribute, being able to feel that you are helping and towards the survival of everyone in the unit and the family is giving you a sense of identity, a sense of purpose.
Yeah, another thing that you write about that helped was, you know, you write, quote, "My mother's hope was also a precious part of what kept us alive." And you can tell us about your mother's hope, but also you wrote about how she looked for the good and passed this on to you and your brother, Jurek.
Looking for the good? Yeah, there's good in everyone. Even in Siberia, even among the people that we lived in, who were really not very friendly towards us, because Poles and the Russians don't really like each other too much. But even there, we found people who were kind and people who were willing to help each other.
Go ahead, Mary. Great stories of hope for your mom is the fact that she held out, believing that your father.
Yes, that was so inspiring.
Married a Russian soldier and been fed.
Oh, I would have given in. I was thinking that. I was thinking, oh my, I love my husband, but I'm hungry. You know, I mean.
And it's amazing. It's such a sad, because I actually remember some Polish women who, to help their children survive, would marry a Russian, and then they would be much better off. But then when the time came when we could leave, they weren't allowed to leave.
Oh.
And they were stuck. They were told by the authorities that, well, you're a Russian citizen now, and you can't leave. Can you imagine the situation? That's horrible.
No, I can't. I just the faith that your mother had, and you write about faith in the book as well, that your father would come, and he did.
You know, that there are a lot of stories about this faith and how when people lose faith, they lose their instinct to survive, and they no longer are trying to survive. As soon as they give up, people die.
Yeah.
It happened in concentration camps, in Siberia, many places. Once you give up, you die very quickly.
Yeah. Well, that's the message of your book. I mean, no matter what situation you're in. I mean, I could honestly talk to you forever. You just have so many great things. And one of the things that cracked me up was you talking about you had that great rectal retinitis joke, which I actually emailed it seriously to like all my family and friends, and I told them about your book, and my father-in-law, he just loves stuff like that. He was practically on the ground. He was cracking up, and I'm going to read it, but I'm going to change one word to, you know what I'm going to, so it says, "To lighten a grim mood, I sometimes tell my patients about a newly discovered disease called rectal retinitis. It happens, I tell them, when the nerve from the patient's rectum crosses the nerve from his retina, producing a crappy outlook."
I'll be friends with somebody who doesn't have a good sense of humor.
Yeah, it's, you know, my mother always told me it was really important to marry someone that made me laugh. And my husband, he's really funny. And seems to think I'm funny, so it works out pretty well.
That's my favorite chapter, is the chapter on humor.
Well, I love your prescription, quote, "Before tackling heavy issues, do some heavy laughing first." How did you find things to laugh about in Siberia?
The culture, you know, the Europeans in general. I don't think it's just Polish people. All Europeans who have lived in Europe through difficult times have learned to have this sense of humor, which they call gallows humor. Gallows humor is basically the idea that if you're going through difficult situations, you have to make jokes about it.
Mary, how has this experience changed your life and your outlook on things, or how was your outlook before, I guess I should ask?
Well, I think that a lot of the things that, like you said, when you read the book, you kept shaking your, or nodding your
head.
Yes. I feel this way, too. And that was sort of my experience with Andy. He was telling me these things, and I was nodding, going, yeah, yeah, I get it. And so it was crystallizing in a way. It made me think about what I believe, which I think is a really wonderful thing to do, and put it down in words. And fortunately, Andy and I believe a lot of the same things.
I've so enjoyed this, and I encourage everyone to get One Life to Give. Andy, is there anything else that you want to add before we conclude?
No, just that Mary and I, one of the reasons why we worked so well together, that we really have a very much similar kind of life philosophy. There was nothing I had to do to convert her to anything. we very much think alike, you know, and it was a really great friendship that we've developed.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is so wonderful. Now, how can people learn more about you? And I love the trailer, by the way, for the book. If you can give a website where people can check that out.
Sure. We're at onelifetogive.net.
True.
It's got a short video trailer. It's got links. It's got purchasing links, a link to my website. So it's got a little bit of everything.
And our book is available in all the bookstores, Borders.
Sure, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, right?
Amazon, yeah.
Well, like I said, I read hundreds of books, and this one just captured my heart. It really did. I want to thank you both so much for coming on, and if people want to contact me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. Everyone have a great week. Keep being healthy. Bye-bye.